Okay.
We're holding three lines from the bottom of Mem Chesem Beis. The Mishnah had told us that describing the Nisuch HaMayim, that there were two, we said there were two basins built into the Mizbeach, two cup-like things, one for the wine, one for the water. And then the Mishnah had continued on that when the Kohen is going to be pouring the water, they would tell him to hold his hand high up, so we don't have the situation with like the Tzedukah did over there where he poured the water on his feet.
What difference would it make if it's high up?
No, so the point is like this. If he holds his hand high up, they can see what he's doing. They can see what he's pouring it into. Again, according to the Rambam, it's not so certain that these two cups were built onto the top of the Mizbeach. There's reason to argue that according to the Rambam, they were actually built onto the base of the Mizbeach or someplace lower down. But it's still the same principle, though. Even the person is definitely standing on top of the Mizbeach, because there's no question. The Mishnah had said that he goes up the ramp. But still, if he's holding his hand high up and you can clearly see that he's pouring it downward into there instead of just onto his feet, then you know he's doing the right thing. So the Gemara says, Tana Rabbana, we learn in a Braisa, expanding on the story. It happened once that a tzeduki poured the water on his feet, and all the people stoned him, all the people pelted him with their astragim. Which, as we said yesterday, it comes out actually from the Yerushalmi actually says they killed him, which means that it wasn't just astragim. No matter how many astragim you pelt somebody with, it's not going to kill him. It had to have been there were stones involved as well. And furthermore, based on the next thing that the Gemara says over here, our Gemara doesn't mention that they killed him, but it says something else. On that day, the corner of the Mizbeach was damaged.
Split.
Was damaged.
Damage.
So again, that goes to show, we're not just talking about astragim. I mean, astragim are a fruit, after all. I mean, an astragim is a little hard, fine, but it's not hard enough to break off a piece of the stones of the Mizbeach, or the plaster, or whatever. So it has to be, again, it goes to show that evidently there were rocks and other projectiles involved.
But also, since the Mizbeach, which is something we want to keep in perfect condition, was damaged the way that, in a way, does that show that it's I wouldn't be able to tell who it would be on that would be.
Well, I mean, it wasn't a good thing that the Mizbeach was damaged, obviously, and we're going to say in a second what they had to do about it. But I'll tell you in a second. I'll tell you in a second something that the Rebbe says about this. Anyway, so the corner of the Mizbeach was damaged. Vehevir bul shal melach, and so they brought a block. Now it was Yom Tov, they couldn't fix it, so they brought a block of salt. Vesasmu, and they sealed it up as a temporary patch. Wait. Now that does not make the Mizbeach kosher to use. As we're going to say in a minute, a Mizbeach that has its corner is not perfectly squared off is possible to use. So it's not that, so it wasn't by putting in the salt they weren't making it kosher, because the Mizbeach is not built out of salt. They would have had to at some point after Yom Tov, they would have actually had to go and fix it by putting in a new stone and then replastering it and so forth. Elam, Mizbeach pogum, but just so the Mizbeach does not look damaged, because not bekavadik for the Mizbeach, that it should be standing there looking like it's been damaged. Shekol Mizbeach, she'ain loy kevesh. A Mizbeach has to have the Gemara is going to say now, the Braisa is going to list now a number of essential elements that the Mizbeach has to have in order to be kosher for the Karbonos. Now, the Mizbeach had a lot of elements and a lot of components to it. I mean, it was a very complicated structure, but there's certain elements of it that are essential to it. Namely, those are the ones, any one about which, the Gemara explains in Zvachim, any component about which the Pasuk uses the word HaMizbeach means that it's essential. That without it, the Mizbeach is possible. So, Shekol Mizbeach She'en Le'loi Kevesh, a Mizbeach that does not have a ramp, because by the ramp, the Pasuk uses the word El Pnei HaMizbeach, which means the face of the Mizbeach, which is the ramp that you go up it. V'loi Keren, or it's missing one of the corners. V'loi Yisoid, or it doesn't have the base. V'loi Ribua, or that it's not square. Possible avoda in any of these, any of those components is missing or damaged, then it's enough to possible it for avoda. So here, the Mizbeach had gotten damaged; they couldn't actually use it for avoda till it was fixed. But temporarily, in order to, so it doesn't look so bad, they stuffed it with a block of salt. Rabbi Yosef Bar Yehuda Omer Af HaSovev. Rabbi Yosef Bar Yehuda says also here's one more component of the Mizbeach that has to be intact, the Sovev, the ledge a little more than halfway up the Mizbeach that the Kohenim would walk around to apply the blood of Achatas and to do various other things that have to be done on the top half of the Mizbeach. He says that the Sovev is also included in that. The reason is, basically the Gemara explains, or actually quotes it over here, that the Gemara there in Zvachim explains there's a pasuk that refers to the Karkov of the Mizbeach. Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda understands the Karkov to mean the Soviv, this ledge around the middle, whereas the other Chachamim hold that it means that it means a decoration, a kiur. It means a decorative rim around the middle of the Mizbeach. Mm-hmm. We were talking about yesterday. I mentioned that there was a sicha where the Rebbe once talked about the idea, the deeper meaning of the story with the tzaddiki pouring the water on his feet and everybody helping him with the asrogim. That he's saying that mesiras nefesh, which is what nisuch hamayim represents, is good maybe for the feet of the Jewish people, the simple people, but not for the elites. And so they stoned him with their asrogim to indicate that no, even the asrogim of the Jewish people, the elite of the Jewish people, disagree with that. Everybody, all of us know that you need Kabbalah Sol. So the Rebbe continues then along those lines. The deeper meaning of what happened over here with the Mizbeach is the Mizbeach represents taking our seichel and offering it to Hashem, which is what you do with a korban when you shecht it, and you have in mind that whatever is happening to that korban by rights should have happened to you. That's the equivalent of taking your personality and your seichel and offering it to Hashem. So here the Mizbeach got damaged, which is to say that it represented the idea that as a result of this tzduki, this tzduki's idea, this his notion that you don't need Kabbalah Sol, that damages even the Mizbeach itself. That damages this concept of offering ourselves to Hashem, which in principle ought to be something that even the tzduki believe in. But without Kabbalah Sol, without the Kabbalah Sol represented by Nisuch HaMayim, you don't have that. So how do they fix it up, at least temporarily? By putting in a block of salt. Salt, we learned back in Eruvin, is similar to water in the sense neither of them is nourishing. Those are the things that people eat, but they don't nourish your body. So therefore, salt, like water, like the water of Nisuch HaMayim, represents this idea of complete bittul, of mesiras haratzon to the Eibishter, and so therefore they fixed up the Mizbeach with a block of salt.
But the tzaddiki didn't damage the Mizbeach.
No, but it was damaged as a result of his behavior.
Did.
Yeah. Now, so we said the Mishnah had described that the wine and the water were poured into these two basins on the Mizbeach, and then now the Mishnah had not described what exactly happens, where the wine and the water go from there. So this is what the Gemara is going to take up now and discuss it in some detail. The general understanding, and this is what the Gemara is going to start with, is that under the Mizbeach there was a channel that went under the Mizbeach, which these things.
I need to watch my.
Okay. Keep it open.
That's fine. Relax. So there was a channel called the Shisin under the Mizbeach, which these things, the wine, the water, also the blood actually flows into those, and then it goes deep into the ground, or actually as far as the blood we had back in Yuma, that it eventually flows out into Nachal Kidron. Right. So, Amar Rabba Babachana Amar Rabbi Yechanan, Shisin Mesheshis Yimei Bereshis Nivru. These Shisin, this channel under the Mizbeach, was actually created when Hashem created the world.
Shisin means what? The vein?
Shisin means this channel.
The channel.
The channel. That the channels that we're saying over here, in other words, that the wine and the water were poured into these cup-like things on the Mizbeach. Then they went out through either, according to, again, we had yesterday, according to Rashi, there were like little nozzles at the bottom of each one, which then the water or the wine would flow through those onto the roof of the Mizbeach and then into the holes, which would descend down through the Mizbeach and into the ground. And according to Tosfos, the bottom it went directly from the cup into the channels. Anyway, so these channels we're saying were created from Sheshes Mebereshes. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Chamuke Yerechayach Kamar Chaloyim Masi Yedei Amon. This is a pasuk from Shir Hashirim. The literal translation of it is the hiddenness of your thighs are like chaloyim, are like jewels. Masi Yedei Amon, the work of a master craftsman. So what does it mean? Chamuka Yerechayach Elo Ashisin, the hiddenness of your thighs refers to the shisin, because they're hidden underground. And that's the Gemara's darshaning, that's what the pasuk means. We know that in general, Shir Ashirim, I mean, it's written in the form of a dialogue between a man and a woman, between a shepherd and a shepherdess, you know, the whole thing over there. But we know the whole thing is a mashal for the relationship between Hashem and the Jewish people. Right. In particular, actually, this pasuk and this pasuk and the couple of pasukim around it actually are part of where it starts. So the Perek over there, Perek Zion of Shir Ashirim, starts off with the other women who in the Nimshol are the nations of the world. Tell Shuvi Shuvi Ashalamis, come back, give up your attachment to Hashem. He's not coming back to you. Come join us. And we answer them. You know, what are you like? You know, what do you think? You guys have anything to compare with what I have from Hashem? And then they go on in the next few psukim to praise what she has, and one of them is this pasuk over here. So we're saying, yeah. So the chamuke means hidden, which refers then to the shisin, which are deep underground. Yurechayich, Rashi says, then is how does it tell us that that's the shisin? Because we find that the side of the mizbeach is called a phi in the pasuk. Yerech hamizbeach. B'shachat ha'isa'al yerech hamizbeach tofoin alof ne'ashem.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So we see that there's this relationship between a yerech, between a phi and the mizbeach. Yeah. In fact, that's one reason we had back in Yuma or maybe in Shkolim. One way that we know that the ramp of the mizbeach is to the south, because if the north side of the mizbeach is described as the thighs of it, and the face of the mizbeach, pnei hamizbeach, means the ramp. Well, then when a person sits down, you know, their face is facing in one direction and their thighs are in the opposite direction. So therefore, like the face is towards the south and the back of the mizbeach, so to speak, is towards the north.
The thighs and the face?
When a person is sitting down, or a person is sitting down with their legs spread out in front of them, let's say. Yeah.
So necessarily the thighs are in the same direction as the...
No, then the thighs are in the back and then... Okay, whatever. Yeah.
That's the thigh.
Yeah, okay. All right, there was something along those lines, like the back of the slide. Okay, whatever. So chamukah yirechayich elu ashisin k'moy chaloyim. When we say they're like jewels, but here the Gemara is darshaning the word chaloyim miloshen cholol, miloshen a hollow. Shem cholalin v'yodin adatahoyim. They're hollow and they go all the way down to the depths. Masi yidei aman. And when it says they're the work of a master craftsman, zu masi yidei umen nusi shal hakadosh baruch hu, means they were made by the ultimate craftsman, by Hashem. Rashi points out over here, by the way, and Tosfos discusses it briefly also, that there were versions of the Gemara where actually it said something about David digging out these shisin. Mm-hmm. So Rashi said, and in fact we're going to have in a few days on Daf Nun Gimel, we're going to have a whole story about that. So Rashi says, I don't like that. We're saying over here Hashem dug out these shisin at Ma'aseh Bereishis. What kind of David HaMelech 3,000 years later?
Where it says that
that's what we're saying. We'll learn on Daf Nun Gimel a whole story about it. Mm-hmm. So different Mefarshim talk about different possibilities to reconcile it. One possibility is, in fact, Tosfos says, maybe indeed, okay, different opinions of what Rabbi Yochanan said, whether he said that the shisin exists from Sheishis Mei Bereishis, or whether he said that David dug them at the time when he was planning out the Bais HaMikdash. Mm-hmm. A couple of other interesting possibilities. One of them is that the Shisin existed from Ma'aseh Bereishis, but eventually, I mean, we're talking almost 3,000 years till the Bais HaMikdash was built, they got stuffed up. So David had to redig them out, had to redig out all the debris that had collected in them. And another interesting...
Or they might have been there and he just dug them up when he built the Bais HaMikdash.
Okay, no, because the Gemara is going to talk about on Daphne and Gimel how he dug all the way down to the Tahoim, all the way down to the water that's under to the subterranean water. We'll have a whole story about it in a few days.
Yeah.
So Marsha brings another interesting possibility. We find where we find that actually we've discussed it before in Yuma, I think, that when David was originally researching where the Bais HaMikdash was going to be built, he at first thought it should be built in Ein Etam, which is a little bit higher than the Har HaBayis. It's in a different area of the land of Yehuda, but actually on the border of Yehuda and Binyamin, also like the Har HaBayis, but a couple of dozen amos higher. Mm-hmm. So therefore, Marsha brings up the possibility. Maybe the Shisin that we're talking about, Adafnun and Gimel, that David dug, were there in Ein Etam. Later on, you know, the whole thing developed, as we'll talk about on Adafnun and Gimel, what happened exactly. And eventually, David realized, you know what, that's a mistake. That's not the place for the Bais HaMikdash. The place for the Bais HaMikdash is on Har HaMoriah. And there, he comes there, and he finds the Shisin already made by Hashem.
Where does he get that information?
Well, we find in the Gemara, in Zvachim talks about how when David and Shmuel were researching where the Bais HaMikdash is going to be built, that at that one point they thought that it should be an item.
HaKadosh
Baruch Hu didn't show David and Shlomo exactly.
Not originally, no. Originally, they did their own research. That's why David says in Tillim, "Kapitul Kuflam Beis." What's the lashon over there? I'm not going to sleep comfortably, etc. Ad emtza makim l'Hashem, until I find the place that is supposed to be Hashem's place. So he had to do a lot of research about it. Afterwards, once he had done the research, once he had done his work, yeah. When the time came after that plague at the end of David's life that's described in Sefer Shmuel, then yeah, they Bishah tells him go set up a mizbeach and bring a korban in the threshing floor of Aravna Hayavusi, and that's going to be the future place of this mikdash. But first, he had to do the work himself to figure out where it should be. Yeah. It's a different question. I don't want to get too far into it because it's really off topic. But there is the Mefarshim talk about. I believe that Rambam talks about the question why indeed, you know, we never find in Chamush Chumash Torah, it never names the place Yerushalayim, and it never says anything about the Makom Asher Yivcha Hashem being Yerushalayim. So why? One reason I believe that the Rambam says this is because if it said that, all the Shvatim would have been fighting over that each one wants to inherit that, each one wants that, wants Yerushalayim to be part of their territory, and the Goyim would also have prevented us from taking it over, or they would have worshipped a desire there to make it possible for whatever like this. The place wasn't known that this way, you know, it avoids all those kinds of problems.
In a way like today.
Yeah. Tanad Rabbi Shmuel, when the pasuk, the very first word of the Torah, Bereshis, altukri Bereshis ela bara shis, that Hashem created the shis in. And one thing is, Mefarshim point out the importance of that. Though, so, you know, it means effectively what? The Ebishter created the Shisin before the rest of the world? In a way, yes, because if the Shisin are meant for the Mizbeach, they're meant to be the place where we're going to be able to get our Kapara from, then yes, that has to pre-exist the world. Tanya, Rabbi Yossi,
what's the spiritual meaning of the Shisin?
That's the Pashtos. That's just actually it talks about Chassidus. The idea, I think, that you have the Nisuch, the water and the wine that we're pouring go all the way down into you know, deep underground into the Tehillim of the world. Yeah, it's, you know, it's the idea of connecting the higher and the lower, etc. Yeah,
I believe Ramchal has a book on explaining the third base of Midrash and a lot of the different things about. The base of Mikdash.
Could be. I'm not familiar with it, but okay.
I know where, I can tell you afterwards where you can find it.
Okay. Thank you. Tanya, Rabbi Yossi, I'm a shisin mecholalin v'yodin ad tahayim. The shisin are hollowed out and go all the way down until the depths, until the abyss. Shenema, as the pasuk says, this is a pasuk or a couple of psukim from Yeshaya. Ashira Nali Didi, I will sing on behalf of my friend, the Navi is saying, Shiras Doidi, a song of my beloved, Lakarmoy, about his vineyard. Kerem Hoyali Didi, my friend, meaning Hashem, had a vineyard, Bekeren Ben Shaman in a really fat corner, meaning Rashi says it means Eretz Yisrael, which is the fattest and richest of all the countries. Mishmanei Aretz, yeah. Well, Mishmanei Aretz is actually Mital Shemayim Mishmanei Aretz, right, yes. Yeah. So my beloved, meaning Hashem, had a vineyard in Keren Ben Shemen, which is Eretz Yisrael. Vayaz Kehu, he surrounded it with a wall, which is, Rashi says, it means he made that the Jewish people have fortified cities, strong cities. Vayisaklehu, he removed the stones from it, which represents the idea of getting rid of the Goyim from Eretz Yisrael so that they don't corrupt us. Vayitaehu Sorek, he planted it with a high quality vine, which means the Beis Hamikdash. And Rashi says in particular, a sodik means the kind of thing where you don't just plant a cutting from a vine, it means you transplant a whole vine, including its roots. So therefore, it represents the Beis Hamikdash, which is the root of our relationship with Hashem. Vayiven Migdol B'Soicha, he built a tower in this vineyard, which represents the Mizbeach, which is built solidly, like a tower.
It's a root, you cannot say it's the whole root.
Well, okay, yeah. I mean, Rashi uses the expression. It's the root and the Jewish people. That makes us beloved to Hashem. Vayiven Migdol B'Soicha, he built a tower in it, which means the Mizbeach, which is built solidly like a tower. Vagam Yekev Chotzav Bay, and he also carved out a wine press in it, which represents the Shisin. Yekev, Rashi says, literally means a pit dug out in the ground. And the pasuk goes on to say that the Ebishter expected great things from this vineyard, and it hasn't lived up to his expectations. And the nimshol is understood. Yeah. So these last things, when it says he planted it with a high quality vine, this means the Mizbeach. He built a tower in it, means the Mizbeach. And then he also hollowed out a Yekev, a wine press in it, means Elu Hashisin.
Who says that? Yeshaya?
It's two psukim from Yeshaya, yeah. Now, this is all so far one possibility, which is that there's actually a hollow area under the Mizbeach where all the wine and water goes into there and eventually goes underground. Now the Gemara is going to bring up a different possibility, that there wasn't one, but rather that the wine and the water that were poured on the Mizbeach ended up spilling onto a spot on the floor. Namely, Tanya, Amar Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadik, Lul Katan Haya ben Kevish.
So it's a bit of a stira? Or?
One interesting thing that Mefarshim talk about is there may have been a difference in this regard between the first and second Beis Hamikdash. The Gemara mentions in Zvachim that, first of all, the Mishnah mentions in Midos that the Beis Hamikdash in the time of the first Beis Hamikdash was smaller than the one of the second Beis Hamikdash. The one of the first Beis Hamikdash, the top of it was 20 by 20 amos, the bottom of it, including the yisod and everything, was 28 by 28. The one of the second Beis Hamikdash was 4 amos larger on each of two sides. It was altogether 32 by 32 on the bottom and 28 by 28 on the top. The first Beis Hamikdash was 24 by 24 on the top, rather.
And the
second one, 28 by 28 on the top. Mm-hmm. So one thing the Gemara explains in Zvachim, in the times of the first Beis Hamikdash, this shisin, this cavity underground that we're talking about, was actually not under the Mizbeach. It was next to it. Mm-hmm. So when you poured the wine and water onto the Mizbeach, they would actually have to flow for some distance along the floor before they went into the shis. Whereas in the second Beis Hamikdash, the Gemara explains, the Chachamim of that time, Darish and Psukim, to understand that no, we should actually build the Mizbeach in such a way that the Shisin are actually underneath it.
So larger.
And therefore they have to make the Mizbeach larger in order to cover that area.
For Amos.
Yeah. So therefore it could be, one possibility is these two things that we're talking about are referring to the first versus the second Beis Hamikdash. So Tanya, Amar Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadik, Lul Katan Ha'ibin Kevish L'Mizbeach, Ma Rovish O'Kevish, there was a little window between the ramp and the Mizbeach on the west side of the ramp. So first of all, Rashi explains like this. We always think of, we always picture it, you have the Mizbeach and then you have the Kevesh directly attached to it. In fact, it wasn't so. The Kevesh was actually not physically attached to the Mizbeach. There was actually a space between them. Mm-hmm. The reason for that is the official reason for the Gemara. The Gemara in a few places in Shas talks about the possibilities, but one basic reason for it is that this way, when they put the meat of the korbanos, when they put the limbs of the korbanos on the fire, they couldn't just put them on; they had to throw them on. By having a space there between the top of the ramp and the mizbeach, first of all, it reminded them of that, so they know to actually throw it over the gap. And second of all, it meant that this way the limbs of the animal are actually passing over the floor rather than just which they have to do. Now, Gemara talks about it in Zvachim.
And also, you have to, in a way, have more kavanah because you can't just go, just put it there.
Okay. Yeah.
We didn't talk about it in Yuma, did we?
We may have mentioned it briefly in Yuma. I don't remember. So there was the space between. So if here is the wall of the Mizbeach, then the Kevesh did not quite reach the wall. There's a space in between.
Right.
What we're saying is, on the west side of that space, the west side of the Mizbeach was where they poured the water and the wine, as we said yesterday, because you went up the ramp, turned left, and therefore you're on the west side of the Mizbeach. So that western area over there is where the Nesachim would go down into. So in other words, according to this, again, they didn't go down underground. You would pour them into the cups on the top of the Mizbeach. And then instead of we're talking about that there was a channel underground, etc., instead they would flow off the side of the Mizbeach and collect in that area over there, in that open area between the Kevesh and the Mizbeach.
Mm-hmm.
The achas l'shivim shana, so once every 70 years, pirche kohuna yodin l'sham, the young kohenim would go down into that space, u'malachdin mishom yayin kodesh, they would collect from there the congealed wine over all the years that wine had congealed over there. Shadomali gulid vela, which at that point, after congealing there for so many years, what?
must have clogged the...
No, so that's the thing. According to this, there's no pipes involved. They pour the wine onto the top of the Mizbeach, and it runs off the side and collects down in this area between the Kevesh and the Mizbeach. So there's nothing to get clogged
up. Where does it go?
It stays there on the floor. It's hemmed in. On one side is the Kevesh, on the other side is the Mizbeach, and I guess we have to assume that there were like little partitions over there on the side to hold it in place.
But from there, it didn't... Right, okay.
Right. So after 70 years, all the wine over there is congealed. So, it resembles cakes of pressed figs. In modern terms, you could say it resembled fruit leather. And then they would take this congealed wine and burn it in a holy place. They couldn't just take it outside the Beis HaMikdash and throw it away. It still has Kedusha. So therefore, they would burn it right there in the Azara. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, so they did have to clean it out once in a while because, yeah, eventually it's going to get filled up. Rashi says, "Shelo yismalu ashisin min anasachim." Eventually, it's going to fill up over the years from all the nasachim. But at least they didn't have to do it that often because it was a big area. Shenemar,
could it fill the space between the ramp and actually the mizbeach?
That's what we're saying.
That's why it has to be cleaned.
Yeah.
Right.
Shenemar, how do we know that you have to burn it in a holy area? The pasuk says, "Bakodesh, in the holy place, Haseich Nesech Sheichar LaHashem." You should pour a libation of wine that's able of fermented wine, meaning wine. Sheichar literally means wine that can get you drunk. LaHashem.
We say that in Halal.
It's not in Halal. It's in Korbanos every day in Parshas Atamim, which means Kashem Shenisuche B'Kedusha. Just as the wine itself, when it's originally poured, has to be in a state of Kedusha. Mm-hmm. It has to be obviously in the Beis HaMikdash itself. Kach Sreifasi B'Kedusha. So also the burning of it when you're finally disposing of it also has to be done B'Kedusha. Mm-hmm. This is my mashma. Where do you see anything in the pasuk about burning? It says Haseich Nesech. It's talking about pouring libation. Where does it say anything about burning it? We actually make a Zeta Shava from the two words Kodesh. Here it's talking about that in the holy place it has to be poured. You should burn the leftover Korbanos in fire. It should not be eaten because it is Kodesh. So just like Noisa of Korbanos, of Kodshim Kale, of Kodshim Kodshim, has to be burnt in the Azara, which is where they were supposed to be eaten. So therefore, also, this wine, when eventually it had to be burnt, which is what Kodesh means, then it means it had to be burnt, Now, the Gemara might have mentioned, also, the Gemara might have also made the point that actually we find at least one place where the word Kodesh actually does mean burning, by Kalaya Kerem, when the Torah says, Pentikdash Hamaleya, it means actually that it has to be burnt.
Doesn't bring it here.
No, it doesn't bring it here, but I'm saying it's a possibility, I guess, that the Gemara might have brought it. I don't know why. I didn't see in any Mefarshim any suggestion of why not.
Which pasuk do you have?
Pentik Dash Hamalaya. It's a pasuk from Parshas Ki Seitzei, talking about Kalai Akarim, the Asabana. So the Gemara says, Keman Ozla Hodetanyo, Detnan, Nesachim Betchila Molen Behen. Who does it go according to? This that it says in a Mishnah, that the Nesachim, the wine and the water that are going to be poured on the Mizbeach, Betchila Molen Behen, at the beginning, it's possible to do Me'ilah with them. Namely, we know in general, if a person uses something that belongs to Hekdesh for his own purposes, so if it's bemazed, then there's a difference between b'shogeg and bemazed, but in particular, usually when we say moilin behen, usually means b'shogeg, which then the thing itself becomes cholin, the me'ilah takes it out of Kedusha, but then the person who misused it is chayev to pay Hekdesh the value of it, plus a chomesh, an extra 25% of the value, and bring a korban, an asham me'ilos. So, the Nesachim, to begin with, Me'ilah applies to them. If a person were to take this wine, for example, and drink it, he would be Chayav HaKoven Me'ilah. Yodel HaShisin Ein Me'ilah Behen. But once they go down into the Shisin, then Me'ilah does not apply to them, because then the Mizbeach has no more use for them. Now, Lema Rabbi Elazar Bar Tzadiki. Should we say that this is only according to Rabbi Elazar Bar Tzadik? De'ir Rabbanan HaNachsu Lahu L'Tayim. Because according to the Rabbanan, why would you even need to mention it? Of course, I mean, the wine is draining down, way down underground. There's no possibility even that anybody's going to get it. In other words, Mela, according to Rabbi Elazar Bar Tzadik, the wine is now in this area between the Kevesh and the Mizbeach. It's possible to get it out of there. The Chiddush is, even though it's possible, and eventually once every 70 years they do, Me'ilah doesn't apply to it anymore. But according to the Rabbanan, it should seem to be irrelevant to talk about whether Me'ilah applies. There's no way. Nobody's climbing down underground to get that wine anyway. The answer is afilo temer rabbanon. You could even say that this Mishnah is according to the rabbanon bid iklat, because you could have a case. What happens, for example, suppose that somebody went down into the shisin, into the channel underground. No, not and retrieved him. We're talking. Suppose that even before, let's say for example, he knows that today they're going to be doing a libation of wine on the mizbeach. As always, he decides he wants some of this wine for himself. So he goes down into this channel under the mizbeach ahead of time and attaches a container to the side over there. So when they pour down the wine, instead of it flowing down and going deep underground, it winds up in this container. Mm. The chiddush would still be that. Nevertheless, meila doesn't apply to it.
And why is that?
Because that's
considered used.
Because we'll get to back in a second. We'll get to that point in a second, why Me'ila doesn't apply. But the point is, it is conceivable, according to the Rabbanon, that a person would be able to get this wine even after it was poured on the Mizbeach. And therefore, we have to say, according to the Rabbanon, that nevertheless, Me'ila doesn't apply in that case.
Interesting.
The Ikadamri, or others say, the question was the other way around. Leimer Rabbanon, he v'leiro b'laz b'tzadik. On the contrary, maybe the question is that maybe this Mishnah is only according to the Rabbanon, not according to b'laz b'tzadik. De'ira b'laz, because if... Because if you're going to say it's according to Rabbi Lazar, akati b'kedusha sayu kaimi. The wine still has its original kedusha. We're saying you have to burn it. According to the Chachamim Mela, it goes down into the shis and you never hear of it again. So therefore, you might say, fine, according to the Chachamim, once you pour it, that's it. It has no more kedusha.
And that's understandable.
And that might be understandable. So therefore, even if you put a container over there, fine. Because
right.
normally it would just go into oblivion. But according to Rabbi Lazar Bat Tzadik, he's saying that you actually have to burn the congealed wine, which means it still has kedusha. So maybe according to him, the illa should still apply. The answer is no. Afilo temer Rabbi Lazar. You could even say the Mishnah goes according to Rabbi Lazar, because we have a general rule. Ein l'chadava shenasa mitzvasa u'melen bo. You never have a case where something was already used, where the mitzvah was already accomplished with something, and me'ila would still apply. The same way as we had, for example, in Yuma, about the blood that's poured on the mizbeach, where technically once it's been poured and the mitzvah has been done with it, me'ila doesn't apply anymore. We talked about the Mishnah had said there that me'ila does apply, but we said that's only midrabanan. Min haTorah, once the thing has been used for its purpose, then that's it. Me'ila is the meila is off the table, because no longer kodshei Hashem. It's no longer something dedicated to Hashem. So yes, it still has residual kedusha to the point where it has to be burnt, but not to the extent, even according to Rabbi Lazar, that meila should apply. Amar Rish Lakish. Rish Lakish says, "Bizman shemenaschin yain agabim mizbeach, when they pour the wine on the mizbeach, pokekines hashisin, they would stuff up the shisin. They would close up the hole." They would close up the hole which the wine would normally drain out through into the shisin.
Close them from above?
Yeah. Rashi says, that's nekev shebereish ha-mizbeach, shanasachim yodin ba'i lo-shisin. The holes on the top of the mizbeach. So again, we said, according to Rashi, the scenario was that you had the cup. You had the cup had a hole at the bottom of it, which there was a nozzle like attached to it, which then the water or the wine would flow through the hole, through the nozzle. It would run along a couple of inches of the top of the mizbeach, and then it would go into the hole and go underground. We're saying that when they're pouring wine, they would stop up the hole. L'kayim mashanemer, to fulfill what it says in the pasuk.
They would stop the hole.
Exactly what it sounds like. And then later on, they would open it. L'kayim mashanemer, to fulfill what it says in the pasuk. Bakodesh haseich nesech sheichel Hashem. In the holy place, you should pour a libation of strong wine to Hashem. My mashma, where do you see from that that it means anything about stuffing up the hole? Amar Papa, sheichel loshen shia. The word sheichel means it's an expression of drinking. Like shichrus, like getting drunk. Loshen shvia, it's also an expression of being full. And loshen shichrus, an expression of getting drunk. So meaning, in other words, the same way as, for example, when a person drinks, as the Gemara is going to say in a second, like his throat is full of wine, and he enjoys it, the same way, so to speak, like you want to have the throat of the mizbeach, it looks full. So therefore, you stop up the hole temporarily so that you see all the wine over there filled up, and then you remove the stopper and let it drain out.
Very nice.
Amar Papa, Shmamino, we see from that, Kisava Inish Chamra, when a person feels satisfied from wine, Migroine Sava. He enjoys it mainly from his throat.
Taste of his throat.
Which Rashi says, therefore, that means that you get the full effect of wine, Rashi says, Rav Papa means, by drinking it down, like by knocking it back, not by taking little sips of it. The same way as we're saying over here, that you had a whole cup full of wine on the Mizbeach, the whole basin full of wine, and only then you take out the stopper and it all drains through at once. The same way, when a person drinks wine, he enjoys it more when he knocks the whole thing back.
So just drink.
drink up, basically. Bottoms up,
bimazak. So those people who are just sipping and tasting like that aren't really...
According to Rashi, they're not really getting the full effect.
Okay.
Wait, I'll tell you in a second. Amar Rava. So Rava says, based on this, so therefore, young Tamar Chacham, who does not have very much wine, and we know from other Gemaras, we learned in Yuma, for example, that wine is actually good for Tamar Chacham. It helps open up his mind and make him sharper. So then, Ligma Gamoy, he should drink it down. He should do, you know, drink the whole thing down at once, so that at least the little amount of wine he gets the full effect of. And indeed, Rava, Akosa, Tebelchasa, Agma Gamoy. Rava, when he had a Kosra Bracha from benching or whichever other mitzvah, he would drink the whole thing down in one gulp, again, in order to savor the mitzvah as much as possible, in order to get the full effect of it as much as possible, as a matter of chibuv mitzvah, to show how precious the mitzvah is to him. Now, that's all according to Rashi, and that last part is brought in Shulchan Aruch, that for that reason, when you're drinking a Kosra Bracha, you should drink down the whole cup, or at least most of it, in one swallow. Having said that, though, Marsha explains the Gemara here exactly the other way around. Marsha says that no, what the Gemara means to say, what Rapapa means to say, and what Rava means to say, is on the contrary. You get the full effect of the wine by sipping it. By the each little bit of it that hits the back of your throat, you enjoy more and more. So therefore, on the contrary, the Gemara means sip your wine, take it in little sips, rather than all at once.
So the other says you enjoyed more in one full...
So Rashi says it means it all in one full thing, and then Marsha is saying bit by bit.
Yeah, so we have the conflicting views.
Because what when you sip it, when you take it in one full shot, what are you going to gain as...
Then you have a whole throat full of wine at once.
And it's
experience.
A special type.
I guess so.
Type of
intensity.
Yeah. Since we mentioned on Omer Aleph the pasuk Chamukah Yerechayich, so here that's the second half of the pasuk from Shashirim. So now the Gemara is going to go back to the first half of the pasuk. Darash Rava, my dichtiv. What does it mean that it says in the pasuk? Again, this is in the mashal. The other women are saying to the woman, to the raya from Shashirim, and in the nimshal, it's the goyim saying to the Jewish people, Mayofu pamayich banaolim bas nadiv. How beautiful are your footsteps and shoes, the daughter of the of the generous one. What does that mean? It means how beautiful are the footsteps of the Jewish people when they're oil of the regal, when they come up to your shalayim for the shalosh regalim.
Yeah.
And when it says bas nadiv, the daughter of the generous one, means bitte shal Avram Avinu shenikra nadiv. That means the Jewish people are the daughter, the children of Avram Avinu, who is called nadiv, who is called a generous one. Shenema, as the pasuk says, nidivei amim nesafu, the generous ones of the nations have gathered together. Amalek Avraham, the nation of the nation of the God of Avraham. So what are the Kei Avraham v'lo yale Kei Yitzchak v'Yaakov? Doesn't Hashem have a personal relationship with each of the others? Why are we singling out Avraham? Ela the Kei Avraham shahu yatchila l'geirim. It means the God of Avraham, we single out Avraham because he was the first of all the geirim. So therefore, in that sense, he's called Nadiv, like some Mepharshim explain. So Rashi says over here, and other Mepharshim explain somewhat similarly, he's the first one who volunteered, who volunteered to become close to Hashem, and therefore all geirim in future history, they all bear the name of Avraham specifically because he's the first one to start that out. And so therefore also when we go on Aliyah the Regal, there's a similar kind of thing also. First of all, among other things, different Mepharshim point out there's Avraham was ready to bring Yitzchak as a korban, and we coming on Aliyah the Regal are bringing korbanos as the Eibishter tells us. Avraham the Eibishter told him lech lecha me'aretzcha, and we leave our homes and then all travel to Yerushalayim for Yom Tov. So therefore there's that relationship specifically that when we come up Bana Olim, then specifically with Bas Nadiv. Specifically, we have that relationship with Avraham more than with any of the other others.
And what? Because we bring the...
Because we bring Karbanos, and then because we're bringing ourselves. We're wandering from our homes like Avraham did because Hashem told him to.
Yeah, very nice.
In many places in Chassidus, it brings this pasuk, Mayofo Pamayach Ban Olam Bas Nadiv. There's a mimer in the Kutta Torah and Shir Hashirim on it, and a number of others that explains that... specifically, when we're speaking of Avraham as Nadiv, we're referencing his Midah of Chesed. We know that Avraham was the ultimate exemplar of Midas HaChesed, to the point, I mean, the Medrash says that the Midas HaChesed says to Hashem, you know, as long as Avraham's around, I have nothing to do, because Avraham is doing my job for me.
Who said that?
It's a medrash someplace. So Avraham specifically is called Nadiv for that reason. But Chesed, we know, you know, unrestricted Chesed can cause problems, right? I mean, Avraham gives rise also, you know, gives rise to Yitzchak, but also to Yishmael, which is Chesed taken to the wrong extremes. So on the other hand, you also need at the same time that you have your feet have shoes. Which Baruchnius represents the idea that represents the idea of all the hashpah that comes down from Hashem to us down to down to us in the lower world, so to speak, like the feet. The feet need shoes to screen out that the chesed should be balanced by gvura, so that we get the proper amount of the proper amount of hashpah, and it is not just scattered about indiscriminately.
Also, shoes represent the wife too.
Represent the wife.
Because you should sell all you own to have a good wife, to marry the daughter of a Talmud Chacham, and you should sell everything you have to
get shoes. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Menachem brings a few places.
Okay. Tam Dvei Rabbanan, my dichtiv. What does it mean that it says in the pasuk? This is the continuation of the pasuk. This Mayofa Par Mayach Banet Olam, and this is the part we brought on Amud Aleph. Chamuke Yerechayich, the hidden parts of your thighs. So before we darshin about the shisim, now we're doing a different explanation. Lama Nimshal Dvei Torah Kiyerech. Why are the words of Torah compared to a thigh? Loy Malach, and here what we're doing is what makes us say that Chamukah Yerechayech is referring to the Torah. So the reason is Rashi says because Rav Anan is taking the next word Kamei Chaloyim literally means jewelry, so therefore it represents the Luchos, which were made out of precious stones, out of sapphire. So therefore the Luchos represent the Torah collectively.
But Yerech
and Masa Yedei Aman, they were made by the master craftsmen because the Luchos themselves were carved out by Hashem.
Right, but Yerech is not Chaloyim.
No, chamuke yerechayef, the hiddenness of your thighs, is kamoi chaloyim, is like jewelry.
What's the connection?
That's what we're saying. You know, that we're saying it's talking about divrei Torah. So why are divrei Torah compared to a yerech, to a thigh? Loy malach, to tell you my yerech beseisa, after divrei Torah beseisa. Just like a thigh is a hidden part, is hidden. Mm-hmm. It's not sneer stick to expose it. After divrei Torah beseisa, so also divrei Torah should be to a certain extent in secret, which means Rashi says we had this concept before that you don't sit out in the middle of the street and teach Torah. You know, Torah is taught in groups, you know, and in relative privacy. I mean, you have a bais medrash, you can have thousands of talmidim in a bais medrash, but it's in an enclosed area. It's not, you know, broadcast out to everybody.
You don't do what some of the Christians do on the subway.
Yeah, basically. V'hainu d'amar Rabbi Elazar, this is like what Rabbi Elazar said. My dichtiv, what does it mean that it says in the pasuk, Higid l'cha adam matov, he has told you, man, what is good. U'ma Hashem dodesh mimcha, but what does Hashem really want from you? Ki im asois mishpat, but to do justice. V'avas chesed, and to love kindness. V'hatznei aleches im alakecha, and to walk modestly with Hashem. So what is this? Asois mishpat zehadin. Doing justice refers to judging, refers to din, to judging honestly. Va'avas chesed zugmilas chasadim. Loving kindness is gmilas chasadim. Va'atznei aleches im alakecha. And when it says be private in going with Hashem, zoyt sas ames va'achnasas kala l'chupa. This means a levaya, and it just means joining in a levaya and in a wedding. Which Rashi says there's two meanings of that. Number one, it means when you're going to a shiva call or to, you know, and they serve food there as they do even now after a levaya, or you're going to a chasana hall, to a wedding. Make sure hatzna leches, you know, don't overdo things. You know, you do the appropriate amount of simcha, the appropriate amount of avelos. You know, don't go just stuffing your face, etc. Don't act b'kalus roish. That's one. And two, Rashi says, is it means that the expenses also should be moderate. That you don't go overboard with the expenses for Hitzos HaMes or Achnos HaSkala.
Did there ever...
No, actually, I'm sorry. Actually, what Rashi says is, what Rashi is saying like this. If you have, for example, a poor person who needs to be buried, or a poor Kala who needs Achnos HaSkala, and you're helping to give tzedakah for that, do that b'hatzne. You don't have to go broadcast all over about the great act of tzedakah that you're doing.
Uh-huh.
And
although the limits, there is no.
There is also a matter of limits. Yeah.
Uh-huh. But the main thing is to do it privately.
Who broadcast a lot of the good they look at doing, those are not usually, from what I've seen, they cannot be the great.
So in a way, it depends. I mean, there have been there are stories, for example, where tzaddikim, where I think some of our rabbeim and others told people that no, but Davka, go and broadcast your tzedakah in order that other people will take an example from it and do the same. So sometimes it is appropriate, but it all depends what it's for. Is it in order to make yourself greater, or is it in order to make the mitzvah greater?
But like, what I'm saying is those people who say everything that they do,
that's right. There's an interesting thing that Ben Yehoyada brings on this. Sometimes, you know, you have people who go to a wedding just so, you know, that everybody can see that they were there, basically. Versus you have people who go to a wedding or a shiva call, taka, to be mesameach chasen v'kala, l'shem shemayim, to be mesameach chasen v'kala, or to be menachem aval. So that's the thing. You know, are you putting yourself, like, in a position where, like, anybody who, you know, whoever's taking pictures at the wedding, you're going to be in every one of the pictures, you know, so everybody knows you were there, you know, or are you really there l'shem shemayim?
How do you know?
It's a person has to know how to act. Now, v'halo dvarim kal v'chomer. So Rebbe Elazar continues, isn't it a kal v'chomer? Uma dvarim shadarkan la'asos in b'pahestia. How much, if you consider these things, hatzlas ames and achnasas kala, which by their very nature are done very publicly, and yet omer Torah hafna leches, the Torah... The Torah nevertheless says that you should be tzniyistik in it. Dvarim shadavkan lasos in betzina, so things that naturally are done privately, like tzedakah, for example, alachas kama v'kama, how much more so you should be doing them privately. So that's the connection that we had, that teaching Torah is also one of those things, even though you want your futzah minus secha chutzah and all, but still there has to be a certain tznius to it. Amar Rabbi Elazar, since we're on the subject of tzedakah, the person who does tzedakah is greater than bringing all the korbanos. Shenema, as the pasuk says, "Asoy tzedakah u'mishpat nivcha l'Hashem mizevach." One who does tzedakah and justice is more chosen by Hashem than a korban. Not one who does the doing of tzedakah and of mishpat is more chosen by Hashem than a korban. V'amar Rabbi Elazar. Gmilas chasadim, which is, for example, like helping somebody out or giving somebody a loan, etc., is greater than tzedakah. Shenema, as the pasuk says, zero lachem l'tzedakah v'kitzur l'fi chesed. Plant for yourselves for tzedakah and harvest according to chesed. Now you have to consider. Let's consider the mashal. Im adam zereya, when a person plants, safak oichol, safak ein oichol. You're not sure, is he going to end up with something to eat or not? The harvest might, the whatever he plants might be damaged. Adam koitza vada oichel, whereas a person harvests, there's no question he's going to eat. So therefore, by the same token, in other words, tzedakah is sort of iffy. Is it going to, you know, is it going to be effective? Is it not? Chesed is definitely going to be effective. V'amar Rabbi Elazar, ein tzedakah mishtalames ela l'fi chesed sheba. Tzedakah is paid to a person according to the chesed in it. A lot of different explanations on that. Rashi says the most basic one is that you don't just give tzedakah indiscriminately. You consider carefully how your tzedakah money is going to do the most good for the poor person, and do it and think of it appropriately like that. There's also a similar idea that Ben Yehoyada talks about that you can have a small amount of tzedakah, that sometimes you can have a poor person who's in a really desperate situation where even a small amount of tzedakah goes a long way. And vice versa, you might have, you know, where sometimes a larger amount of tzedakah doesn't end up, you don't get as much bang for your buck. So the tzedakah is paid according to the chesed in it. Shenemar zero lachem l'tzedakah v'kitzur l'fi chesed. Same pasuk. Plant for yourselves according to tzedakah and harvest according to chesed. Tana Rabbanan b'shloisha dvarim gdolei gmilas chasadim yaisim na tzedakah. There's three ways in which gmilas chasadim, for example, giving a loan, is greater than tzedakah. Number one, tzedakah b'mamayinai, and gmilas chasadim is ben begufa ben mamayinai. Tzedakah means you're giving a poor person money. Gmilas chasadim means you're doing it with your own goof. For example, Rashi gives the examples of gmilas chesed, or some of the things we were talking about before, going and making a shiva call, going and being mesameach chasen v'kala, escorting somebody on the way. Those are all things that involve you yourself, not just your money. And it can also involve money. For example, lending him money or lending him goods. Number two, tzedakah is specifically la'aniyim. Gemilas Chasadim is Bein La'aniyim, Bein La'ashirim. Gemilas Chasadim, rich people also need loans and favors and whatnot. So Gemilas Chasadim benefits more people. And number three, Tzedakah L'chaim. Tzedakah is specifically for the living. Gemilas Chasadim, Bein L'chaim, Bein L'meisim. And Gemilas Chasadim is both for the living and the dead. Because again, for example, when you join in a Levaya, you're doing a Gemilas Chesed for the dead person. And in fact, as we know, Rashi says on Chumash, it's a Chesed Shalemes, because the dead person is never going to pay you back.
Yeah. Well, not in this world.
Yeah. V'amar Rabbi Elazar, kol ha'oseh tzedakah u'mishpat, whoever does tzedakah and justice. And by the way, this that we've been talking throughout this Gemara, the juxtaposition of tzedakah and justice, one of the many explanations of it is that it means, for example, the person is generous with tzedakah to other people, but for himself, he acts with strict justice. Do I really need this thing, or is it a luxury? You know, that kind of thing. There's a story in the Yerushalmi along those lines of the Chachamim one time are going around collecting tzedakah. They pass by a rich person's house, and they overhear him telling his son to go buy the yesterday's vegetables from the store. They'll be cheaper. So they figure, you know what? I mean, a cheap guy like that, are we really going to get much out of him? Let's go around our other rounds. We'll come back to him later. Maybe we'll get a few cents out of him. They come back later. To make a long story short, they get a very, very generous amount of tzedakah from him. So they ask him, what's going on over here? And he tells them exactly that. When it comes to myself, I can, I should be cheap. Why should I get today's vegetables when I can use yesterday's? You know, they're a little bit wilted, but they're still pretty edible. Whereas for the aniyim, I have no right to do that.
There was a guy that was mentioned on H.com who did a lot of that stuff. He unfortunately died earlier last year.
There was a lady about, I don't know, 15 years, probably goes back like 10, 15 years or something. It was something like that. She worked as a secretary or something for like 50 years. She saved almost her whole salary. She lived alone. She never married. So she lived very frugally. But in the end, it turned out that over her lifetime, when she passed away, they found out she'd given over her lifetime about $1 million or $2 million to tzedakah. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. No, but that's what we're talking about, tzedakah and mishpat.
Yeah.
So, someone who does tzedakah or mishpat, ke'ilu mile kol ha'olam kulei chesed. It's as if he filled up the whole world with chesed. Shenema, oyev tzedakah or mishpat, one who loves tzedakah and justice, chesed Hashem mala ha'aretz, the chesed Hashem fills up the world. Shema Taimar, now you might say, Kol HaBol Likbaitz Kofitz, well then fine, anybody who wants to jump ahead can go jump ahead. Which means, in other words, so Rashi says it means that a person might think, okay, well, I want to give tzedakah, so I'm going to go ahead right away and do it, and I'm going to right away assume that Hashem is going to make sure that the people I give it to are appropriate people. No, you have to do your legwork first. Talmud Lama, the pasuk says, "Ma'yaka chastacha lekim." How precious, like rare, is your chesed Hashem? Meaning, it's not so simple to make sure when you're giving tzedakah to make sure that the recipients are worthy. You have to do your legwork. You have to do your homework and make sure that the organizations and whatever that you're giving your tzedakah to, or the individuals that you're giving your tzedakah to, are needy and deserving. Now, don't just go scatter around money indiscriminately.
There's a lot of that.
Yeah. Chesed Hashem mala aretz v'gomer yochol af yorei shemayim kein. So you would think the same thing applies to a yorei shemayim, that he also may have that same problem. No, Talmud Lama v'chesed Hashem me'olam v'adoyim al yoreiav. Hashem's kindness is from generation from one world to the other on those who fear him. In other words, if a person develops yorei shemayim, then Hashem helps him. Hashem gives him the siyata d'shmaya that his tzedakah will go to the appropriate will go to the appropriate causes. Amar Abchamam Bapapa, Kol Adam Shiyash.
What do you mean, Yacholaf Yerushamayim?
That's what you would think. A Yerushamayim has the same problem that he has to, that he also, who says he's giving tzedakah and it ends up by deserving people. That's what we're saying, that the Ebishter does.
Why should you have the question about a Yerushamayim?
You would think, so that's what we're saying. In other words, the Ebishter does a favor for the Yerushamayim that he makes sure that tzedakah dollar goes to where it needs to go, to appropriate. I mean, there's a flip side of that, because there's a Gemara in Bava Basra that says about that Yirmiyahu davened about the Rishayim of his generation, that when they're giving tzedakah, that the Ebishter should arrange that the recipients end up being unworthy people, so that way they don't even have the mitzvah of tzedakah. Although there is an interesting thing that says about that in a way there's a hidden bracha in it. If they're giving tzedakah even though the recipients aren't deserving, then maybe they deserve that. Hashem should give them tzedakah even though they're not deserving.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, Amar Chama Bapapa, Kol Adam Shiyash Olav Chayin, any person who there's Chayin, there's gracefulness on him, like people like him, be a Shu Yoreh Shemayim, then you know that he's a Yoreh Shemayim. Shenema Chesed Hashem Ha'olam V'Adoyim Ha'yoreyav, the kindness of Hashem is from one world to the other on those who fear him. Now, what does it mean when the pasuk says she opens her mouth with wisdom and the Torah of kindness is on her tongue? What do you mean the Torah of kindness? Is there a Torah of kindness? Is two different Torahs, one of kindness, one of not? Ella, what it means is Torah lishma zui Torah shal chesed. When you're learning Torah lishma, then it's considered a Torah of chesed. Shaloi lishma zui Torah shayna shal chesed. When you're learning shaloi lishma, then it's a Torah not of chesed. One we in Chassidus in a few places it talks about the idea when a person is we know the famous pasuk. We say it when they lift up the sefer Torah. Orich yom bimina bismayla osha v'chabed. There's a right way and a left way to learn the Torah. So when a person learns Torah lishma, that's the right way, and the right is associated with chesed. So that's Torah's chesed. As opposed to when a person learns Torah shaloi lishma, it's still a mitzvah. It's mitzvah shaloi lishma ba lishma. But nevertheless, it's associated with the left side, which is Gvura. So it's not a Torah of Chesed. It doesn't bring down the Eibishness Chesed to this world to the same extent as Torah Lashma.
So Rishav Kavod is not Chesed?
But it also has... it's more so the most damaging kind that you're learning Lashma as...
There's two different kinds of Shaloi Lashma. Tosfos points this out in a few places. There's Shaloi Lashma, for example, a person learns Torah so that everybody will honor him as a Talmud Chacham or whatever. That's sort of an acceptable kind of Shaloi Lashma. It's not a great thing, but it's not harmful either. The damaging kind of Shaloi Lashma, which the Gemara talks about in a few places, is where a person learns Torah in order, for example, that then he can use the halachas he learned to attack other people, to harm other people. Like, you know, he learns the different loopholes in halacha and uses them like for shady business dealings, or to lord it over other people. Look, I know this, you don't, you're an amar. That's that kind of thing. That's lakanter, it's called, and that's not a good thing.
And that's not
mitzvah lishma. Right, that's not exactly. Ikad Amri, a different version. Torah lalamda zui Torah shal chesed. When a person learns Torah in order to teach it to other people, that's a Torah of chesed. He's using the Torah to do chesed to other people. Shaloi lalamda zui Torah she'ena shal chesed. When a person learns Torah not for the intention of teaching it, it's a Torah, but it's not a Torah of chesed.
That's very powerful, and there is such a thing.
I mean, there is an importance of learning Torah for of a person learning Torah for himself also, But yeah, after all, the same way as a person needs a right hand and a left hand, you need the yamin and you need the smo, but you have to be aware of the difference.
I don't know my left hand.
Yeah. Also, it's.